Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 972. They are all bound on the wheel. Reflections on Charlottesville. This is being recorded on August 29th of the year 2017. I have felt, a little bit like a recalcitrant teenager being instructed to go up and do your homework. You know, David, now I want you to go right upstairs and do your homework. You know, people have been saying, well, what do you think about Charlottesville? You know, and just, I'm going to reread a poem I have read in the past, which pretty much sums up my feelings on Charlottesville. I really, in a sense, didn't want to do anything about it, precisely because of the feelings that are embodied in this Robinson Jeffers poem that I'm going to reread. But like the recalcitrant teenager who accedes to his parents' will, and even though he wants to go out and shoot baskets or play ball or go out with the gang and do whatever, he says, "Oh, okay, I'll do a program about Charlottesville," you know, with a big sigh of regret and resignation. So I'm going to talk about Charlottesville and the feelings that it inspires in me. And beyond that, the political and ideological foundations of people on the right and the left in the mainstream media, the so-called alternative media, the so-called progressive sector, and the Republican Party. All of them, I think, have set the table for what is happening now, and they should not be surprised. This is a program that may not work. I'm going to try to highlight and summarize so many things that I have spoken about in the past. The written description for the show will have links to many of the programs I have done in the past. But really, what took place in Charlottesville and beyond that, what is taking place throughout the country and abroad. It is happening in Ukraine. It is happening in Japan. It is happening elsewhere in Europe. It is happening in India. And all of these things are happening because of what people in the past have not done, or what they have done, or really what they have not done. I'm going to summarize my feelings by rereading a poem I have read in the past. A line from this poem constitutes part of the title of this program. The poem is "Be Angry at the Sun" by Robinson Jeffers, J-E-F-F-E-R-S. "The public men publish falsehoods is nothing new. That America must accept, like the historical republics, corruption and empire has been known for years. Be angry at the sun for setting, if these things anger you. Watch the wheels slope and turn. They are all bound on the wheel, these people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, Asia. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. You are not Catullus, you know, to lampoon these crude sketches of Caesar. You are far from Dante's feet, but even farther from his dirty political hatreds. that boys want pleasure, and men struggle for power, and women, perhaps, for fame, and the servile to serve a leader, and the dupes to be duped. Yours is not theirs. Really, I could end the program here, because that really sums up the way I feel about things. In our last program, For the Record 971, I took a look at what author Jeffrey Caulfield calls the radical right and their role in the assassination of JFK, the amalgam of domestic fascist groups, the American Nazi Party, the States Rights and the National States Rights Party, the Ku Klux Klan, the John Birch Society, and the Minutemen are all heavily overlapped and constitute what I believe was a domestic gladio, elements of a domestic gladio program, just as elements of the intelligence community, the Galen Org, and CIA and NATO Intel put together various fascist groups in Europe, the residual of what had been the fascism of Europe in World War II. They basically stitched those together and armed them and kept them in reserve as a stay-behind group in the event of a successful Soviet invasion of Western Europe, something that really could not have taken place, but more importantly, perhaps, in the event of a democratic accession to power of a socialist or Marxist government. And the way it played out, of course, was that the Gladio and stay-behind networks were actually used for fomenting terrorist incidents that were used as a justification for crackdown by the right to eliminate political opponents who were in the center or left of the center. And often those crimes were blamed on the political left. The elements that we looked at, and For the Record 971, were not only functioning as sort of street-level operatives for a large conspiracy to murder JFK that was at one level operated by the intelligence community, the CIA in particular, at another level, the military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower called it, and at the higher level, the fascist international, and at the highest level, the corporations and international cartels that spawned fascism in the first place. We looked at these groups, the antecedent of what is called the alt-right today, a term that makes me want to puke all over the board here. I can't stand that term, but it has passed into popular usage. And, of course, the alt-right, unquote, was very much present in Charlottesville. And there have been other demonstrations of a similar nature. Now, the focal point of Charlottesville, at which David Duke played a prominent part, again, like the poem, the gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. Well, there were many passionate men and women on both sides. And the servile to serve a leader and the dupes to be duped. Well, they were in evidence at both sides. Donald Trump, whom I despise, is the classic broken clock that is right twice a day. I wouldn't say there were nice people on both sides, but there certainly was X amount of blame on both sides. Not even so much the street cadre we saw in Charlottesville, but what I'm going to attempt to highlight in this program, which is the fact that the focal point of Charlottesville were some statues honoring Robert E. Lee and other military heroes of the Confederacy. The sticking point was a statue of Robert E. Lee, and the, quote, alt-right proponents felt that Lee and the Confederate battle flag and other symbols of the Confederacy and slavery should be preserved for the purpose of heritage. The other side said they should be abolished or destroyed because of that very same symbolism, racism and slavery. We took a look at Ray Lehart, or Lehart, who was a participant in the hate bus, sort of an antecedent to Charlottesville, in which the American Nazi Party commandeered a Volkswagen minibus and piled some Nazis inside of it to confront the Freedom Riders, who were traveling by Greyhound bus to the South to support civil rights and black voter registration. What we're going to be looking at here, Ray Lehart was one of the American Nazi Party members who was affiliated with the hate bus, probably with Lee Harvey Oswald, certainly with the Dallas American Nazi Party that helped to, and people like Robert Suri, whose wife was Edwin Walker's personal secretary, who printed up the Wanted for Treason handbills in Dallas, Texas, prior to JFK's trip down there. Lehart eventually was the best man at David Duke's wedding. And when we look at the forces and elements that we touched on in For the Record 971, from the American Nazi Party, National States Rights Party, Ku Klux Klan, John Birch Society, Minutemen Milieu, the quote alt-right, unquote, on up through David Duke, to organizations like the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, its founder Yaroslav Stetsko of the OUNB, we find the very elements that have evolved and prospered to this day, and it manifested in Charlottesville. And frankly, although undoubtedly many of the people in Charlottesville, perhaps embodied in the young lady who was killed when Mr. Fields drove his car into the crowd, practicing exactly the type of lone wolf Nazi terrorism that has been advocated by organizations like the National Alliance, and that Glenn Greenwald, one of the darlings of the so-called progressive sector, ran legal interference for 4 years and did so pro bono. He worked for free, not to criminalize free speech, as some of his acolytes have falsely or inaccurately maintained, but he removed them from civil liability. So when you saw that young lady killed by that driver, that is the type of lone wolf Nazi terrorism that is advocated and has been advocated for years by the National Alliance, and civic liability for that, not criminalizing free speech. You can still say it, or you could still say it. However, if it could be reasonably demonstrated that your words inspired others to kill people or hurt them, then you bore civil liability for that. Just as if you had left a rake with the teeth facing up on your property, somebody stepped on it and injured themselves, you would have civil liability. They could sue you for damages. Not anymore, however. What good old Citizen Greenwald did, and what he did working for free, was to clear the ground for exactly that type of violence. And that is a truly evil, sick thing to do. But what is more evil and more sick than that are the sycophants and the acolytes of the Glenn Greenwalds and the other elements of the so-called progressive sector that manifested just exactly what you saw in Charlottesville. I'm going to have more to say about Greenwald in a few minutes, but for the record, and a very appropriate number of the program, for the record, 888, Compendium on Citizen Greenwald, A Shiller for Killers goes into that, and his other work, Running Legal Interference for Nazi Murderers, and Doing So Pro Bono. When people like that are held up as political role models, as idealists, and when they get Pulitzer Prizes and Polk Awards, and when these so-called progressive sector, as well as the mainstream media, are oohing and aahing all over Glenn Greenwald, well, what else could be expected? Nothing else. They are all bound on the wheel. These people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, and Asia, observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. And what I'm doing, I'd like to think, is serving the cold passion for truth. It hunts in no pack.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
For the Record, 755, and For the Record, 756. Go into WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, Eddie the Friendly Spook, Snowden, and their support for Ron Paul. Ron Paul is a congressman from Texas and is a man who has been networking with David Duke for decades. Beyond that, Ron Paul is joined at the hip with the neo-Confederate movement, not statues of Robert E. Lee or of Jefferson Davis or Stonewall Jackson or whoever. I understand the view that statues are symbols. They don't do anything, however. The only thing, statues get rained on, snowed on, defecated on by pigeons. If they're made of copper, they turn green with age. Personally, the only thing I do with statues is walk past them on my way to somewhere else. But what Ron Paul has embodied is not only the likes of David Duke, with whom he has networked for decades, but beyond that, Ron Paul is joined at the hip with the neo-Confederate movement and organizations like the Ludwig von Mises Institute and the heavily overlapped League of the South. The League of the South, whose former head, Jack Hunter, was the chief blogger for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, to which Eddie Snowden contributed. Jack Hunter was a chairman of the League of the South. The League of the South feels that the South was correct in its behavior in the Civil War, that the South should secede again. I heard some radio broadcasts by people from the League of the South. One of them suggested that slavery was justified because it was the only way that black people could make a successful transition from tribal to industrial society. I heard another apologist from the League of the South saying that, well, I have to attenuate this slightly for FCC purposes. He said that if the slaves hadn't been happy, implying that they were, then all of those black mammies who were nursing those little white babies could just smother them in their T word, using a slang term beginning with T for the human mammary gland that I can't use on the air. The League of the South is heavily overlapped with the Ludwig von Mises Institute, and Ron Paul is very, very close with the Ludwig von Mises Institute. Most of Ron Paul's political PAC was financed by Peter Thiel, who was a major backer of Donald Trump. Maybe the friendly spook Snowden not only gave money himself to Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, but the chief legal counsel for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign was a guy named Bruce Fein, last name F-E-I-N, and he was Eddie Snowden's first attorney. He also is the attorney for the Snowden family. And Julian Assange is a big fan of both Ron and Rand Paul. Apparently Rand Paul helped to introduce Bruce Fein to Ron Paul, or perhaps it was to Eddie Snowden. I'm not sure which offhand. In any event, for the record, 756 goes into that. Julian Assange is a big fan of Ron and Rand Paul. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks held forth on the Pirate Bay website that was financed by a prominent Swedish fascist, one of Europe's most prominent fascists, named Carl Lundstrom, L-U-N-D-S-T-R-O-N. Carl Lundstrom and Daniel Freiberg, a wealthy Swedish fascist who now is working with Richard Spencer, who has had a lot of publicity in recent months. They were part of the same political milieu as David Duke. By the way, and for the record, 732 and others, it was not Carl Lundstrom who arranged a Scandinavian speaking tour for David Duke. It was Daniel Freiberg, but they are both very close. The man who helped connect WikiLeaks and Julian Assange with Carl Lundstrom, again, part of the same international fascist milieu as David Duke, was a fellow named Joran Jermas, J-E-R-M-A-S. He is one of Julian Assange's most important aides. He himself is a doctrinaire Holocaust denier. He was the guy that made the link between Carl Lundstrom and WikiLeaks. Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, who said, quote, "It is the duty of all good Christians and Muslims to deny the Holocaust," is in charge of WikiLeaks operations for Russia. It remains to be seen how the Russiagate PSYOP ties in directly with Mr. Jermas. However, what emerged, I've been warning about Julian Assange that his entire operation not only wasn't progressive, it wasn't enlightened, but it was actually a fascist operation from the day one. Assange himself appears to have been part of a fascist mind control in Australia called the Santa Ketanen Park Association, also known as the Family, not to be confused with the Family, an American Christian fascist organization. Assange himself is a believer in eugenics. He is someone who is a subscriber to Chicago School and Austrian School Economics. When it came out that Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, again, in charge of WikiLeaks operations for Russia and also Belarusia, and whose son, a bird of the same political feather, a guy named Johannes Wallström, who is in charge of WikiLeaks operations for Scandinavia. When that came out, Julian Assange, as discussed in, for the record, 745, back in 2011, accused people who were accusing him of being part of an international Jewish conspiracy. That was exactly the standard fascist rhetorical tool that has been used for the better part of 100 years. And when people saw Julian Assange accusing, by the way, the publisher of the Guardian newspaper, no friend of Israel, of being, quote, part of an international Jewish conspiracy, He, when told that the guy was not Jewish, he said, well, he's sort of Jewish, meaning he has a Jewish brother-in-law. An interesting response. That would have been the response of someone from the Nazi SS. When I warned about that, people did not pay it, but warned about what WikiLeaks was. People didn't pay much attention. During the recent campaign, WikiLeaks emerged full-blown as the Dirty Tricks online component of the Republican Party, and they were in touch with Roger Stone, a man whose political resume goes back to Watergate and who was recruited as a political operative by Roy Cohn, Donald Trump's first attorney and Joe McCarthy's right-hand man during the red-baiting witch hunts of the early 1950s. Julian Assange, again, emerged full-blown as the online Dirty Tricks operative of Donald Trump. He of the alt-right affiliations. When people pointed that out, once again, WikiLeaks came out with a tweet, I think it was, or perhaps a post, intimating that all of their critics were, quote, Jews, unquote. Later, WikiLeaks said that people had to be very careful of media outlets controlled by the Rothschilds, unquote. That is a standard fascist bugaboo and something that really, again, should have alerted people to what was going on. And we should note that America's only official WikiLeaker, Jacob Applebaum, whom himself, just like Eddie Snowden, who was CIA in 2009, when suddenly the Angel of Mercy alighted on his shoulder and he decided to crucify himself for the interests of humanity. In fact, Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden is a foul-mouthed little fascist who observed, quote, and I have to attenuate this, the elderly wouldn't be effing helpless if you'd stop sending them effing checks so they can sit on their A-blank blanks all day and lay in hospitals. Something very much part and parcel to what the GOP would like to do. Jacob Applebaum receives financing from the CIA from a CIA derivative organization, the Open Technology Fund, which is derivative of Radio Free Asia. When you're looking at WikiLeaks, when you're looking at Ron Paul, when you're looking at Julian Assange, when you're looking at WikiLeaks, when you're looking at Eddie Snowden, you're looking at Ron Paul, you're looking at the neo-Confederate movement, you're looking at people that network with David Duke. One of Ron Paul's top aides is a guy named Walter Block, who has a theory he calls voluntary slavery. Again, Ron Paul heavily overlapped with the neo-Confederate movement, not statues of Robert E. Lee, not memorials, but people who are out there advocating on behalf of the Confederacy, advocating that the South secede again, and justifying slavery. And in Walter Block's case, touting for it again. This would be part of the libertarian philosophy. It should come as no surprise that we are seeing what we are seeing, and the so-called progressive sector that absolutely prostrated themselves in front of WikiLeaks, in front of Edward Snowden, and in so doing prostrated themselves at the feet of the likes of David Duke, the League of the South, people who justify the Confederacy, people who advocate slavery, felt that it was good and that it augurs well for the future. Well, they were prostrating themselves on behalf of the very same things that we are told they were opposed to down in Charlottesville.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Watch the wheel slope and turn. They are all bound on the wheel. These people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, Asia. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. So let the servile serve a leader, and the dupes be duped. Well, they sure as bloody hell were. After Ibby Snowden got his little CI hand, Ron Paul, a Palestinian Libertarian Organization, hands on the NSA's family jewels, so to speak, he gave them to Glenn Greenwald. Glenn Greenwald also is something of a minor saint to the so-called progressive sector. Again, in For the Record 888, we took a look at Glenn Greenwald, who before he was a journalist, worked for years running interference for the leaderless resistance strategy that was executed, and I use the term advisedly, by Mr. Fields when he drove into the crowd at Charlottesville. It was executed by Timothy McVeigh, who was idolized by, among others, Andrew Auernheimer, a brilliant Nazi hacker now holding forth in Ukraine, who was the designer for the Daily Stormer website, one of the leading websites for the forces of the right in Charlottesville. Greenwald spent years running interference for these Nazi killers and for the leaderless resistance strategy. He has invaded that was against the criminalization of free speech. This had nothing to do with the criminalization of free speech. It wasn't making it illegal, but rather what he did was to run interference for people who advocated for the kind of violence you saw in Charlottesville, for the kind of violence that was implemented by Timothy McVeigh, or another guy who recently tried to set off a bomb in Oklahoma. Organizations like the National Alliance specifically publish novels that are intended as instructional manuals for perpetrating leaderless resistance violence. What Greenwald did was not to protect free speech against criminalization. You could still say that, but rather, again, as I said before, the idea was that you bore civil liability for that. If you advocated for killing people or hurting people because of their race, religion, what have you, or sexual preference or whatever, you could still advocate for that. But if it could be reasonably shown that people who executed those desires and had been influenced by your website or by your campaign materials or whatever, then you bore civil liability for that. Just like a homeowner who leaves a rake on their lawn with the teeth up, then somebody steps on that, gets hurt, they could then sue the homeowner. That is what Glenn Greenwald did. And again, he too has been elevated to something of a minor saint by the people in the so-called progressive sector and also the mainstream media. Mainstream media were so righteous in their condemnation of what took place in Charlottesville, mostly the execution, and I use the term advisedly again, of the leaderless resistance lone wolf type of fascist terrorism that Mr. Fields exercised when he drove into the crowd and killed that young woman. That is what Glenn Greenwald ran interference for, and the mainstream media and the so-called progressive sector absolutely were weeping with tears of joy and ecstasy at what a wonderful creature Mr. Greenwald is. And in fact, he is nothing of the kind. When you elevate people like that to the position of sainthood, you cannot expect anything else by what happened in Charlottesville. And indeed, in the recent election, Donald Trump, a man who was reading My New Order, a collection of Hitler's speeches intended as a sequel to Mein Kampf, he kept it by his bedside. He read it at night when he wanted to lull himself to sleep. 48% of the eligible voters did not vote in this election. And the so-called progressive sector, and yep, we're going to get to Bernie Sanders and the Socialist Workers Party in a few minutes, but they just couldn't bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton. And it is so funny. I mean, like many people, I was concerned about some of Hillary's foreign policy stances. However, she proved herself during the campaign to be open to adjusting her point of view to the wishes of the base, something that politicians are supposed to be doing, and that might very well have given incentive to people to work for genuine peace and thereby influence Hillary Clinton, who demonstrated during the campaign that she was open to adjusting her stances according to the wishes of the political base that she served. I don't place too much stock in some of the stances she took. She was a woman running for president, and any woman running for president, if she is going to be serious, has to act like a tough guy to be accepted in this society. As Secretary of State, she presided over the reboot of relations with Russia. Eddie the friendly spook Snowden from the CIA, embodying the values of Ron Paul and the neo-Confederate movement and the GOP, helped put an end to that with a generous assist from WikiLeaks, and Jacob Applebaum of the CIA, something else that has been forgotten. And then we should note that ultimately the end of the reboot of relations with Russia laid the groundwork for the Maidan coup, in which the old OUNB fascists from the World War II period that had evolved and had successor organizations was put in power as a result of a very obvious coup d'etat. That coup d'etat was financed in part by Pierre Omidyar, the fellow whose Intercept and First Look Media are the journalistic fiefdom of citizen Glenn Greenwald. He who runs Interference for the Leaderless Resistance Strategy, and who did so for free for years. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. Yes, indeed. They are all bound on the wheel. These people, those warriors, this republic, Europe and Asia. Pierre Omidyar, the journalistic sponsor of Glenn Greenwald, helped to finance the OUNB fascists in Ukraine, that coup. He also helped to finance the ascent of Narendra Modi in India. Narendra Modi, someone viewed with great favor by Steve Bannon. Narendra Modi's BJP party is a political cat's paw for the RSS. The RSS is a Hindutva, H-I-N-D-U-T-V-A, fascist organization modeled after Mussolini's black shirts, and one whose members expressed admiration for Adolf Hitler. Hindutva means Hindu nationalist slash fascist. One of the things about fascism is it deflects political anger and dissatisfaction onto the ubiquitous other, whether the Muslim Brotherhood fascist organization, an Islamic fascist organization, points to Christians and Jews as the other. the Hindutva fascism of Narendra Modi points to Muslims, and they have perpetrated absolutely lethally brutal oppression of Muslims in India from before India actually achieved independence. And that coup too, or that electoral accession of Narendra Modi and his BJP and the RSS, the Hindutva / Hindu nationalist fascist organization that murdered Mohandas K. Gandhi. That is the organization that assassinated Mahatma Gandhi. And it was financed, the ascent of that organization was financed in part by citizen Omid Yarp. So how can you really be surprised when things like Charlottesville take place? That public men publish falsehoods is nothing new. Be angry at the sun for setting if these things anger you. Watch the wheel slope and turn. They are all bound on the wheel. These people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, Asia. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
And I think that before I get into the Ukrainian situation, in which the very same Ukrainian fascists who had executed Hitler's will during World War II, the very same Ukrainian fascists who became a key part of the Galen spy outfit, the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, an organization that was formed in 1943 by Adolf Hitler, composed largely of the OUNB, its most important contingent, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Bulgarian National Front, the Croatian Ustashi, the Slovakian Linka Party, and other smaller groups that became a key part of the Republican Party. And it evolved from the Crusade for Freedom. I think maybe what I'm going to do, again, due to the limitations of time, is to really do two shows. They are all bound on the wheel, because I think reflections on Charlottesville, and we have not even gotten to the GOP. The GOP, boy, they're just the bigotry and defense of racial and religious prejudice has no place in our society. This from the Republican Party. Ye gods. I mean, that is like a syphilitic whore discoursing on the virtues of celibacy while she pulls a train. I mean, that is just surreal. We'll talk about the Republican Party, perhaps. I think certainly in this show, I want to get into Bernie Sanders, too, who has as a key element in his ideological development the Socialist Workers' Party. The Socialist Workers' Party was a key vehicle used both by some of the so-called street fascist organizations like the American Nazi Party, the Klan, the National States Rights Party, as well as elements of the intelligence community like the CIA, for basically giving their operatives a left cover so that when they wreaked whatever type of mayhem they sought to wreak, or perhaps not even mayhem, but when they did whatever political damage they would do, it would be blamed on the left. Indeed, Hitler himself saw the Trotskyite movement as a very useful vehicle. We will recap that, if not in this show, in the next. The Socialist Workers' Party is a Trotskyite political party. I think before we move on to the Republican Party, we might cap our reflections on what happened in Charlottesville with a piece from the Pando Daily. Now, I've read this before. This is authored by Mark Ames from the Pando Daily of May 1st of 2015, bearing in mind the links of Ron Paul and Rand Paul to Julian Assange, who loves him, and to Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden. Ralph Nader, by the way, was promoting Ron Paul in a recent book called Unstoppable, How the Left and Right Are Joining Forces. Just like in Charlottesville, huh? Mark Ames, on May 1st of 2015, wrote an article for Pando Daily, Baltimore, and The Walking Dead. There has been much discussion of Black Lives Matter. And again, this is the idol of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden. This is the idol of Julian Assange. This is the person being promoted by Ralph Nader in his book. This is the person who lies behind the people whom the mainstream media were lionizing, whom the so-called progressive sector and the so-called alternative media were lionizing. Good old Ron Paul. Reflect on this against Charlottesville. So when Rand Paul went on Laura Ingraham's radio program to blame Baltimore on black culture and values and, quote, lack of fathers, unquote, the libertarian whom Time called the most interesting man in politics, unquote, was merely rehashing 25-year-old mainstream Republicrat bigotries, the very same bigoted wrong assumptions that led to all the disastrous policies we're now paying for today. Which brings me to the libertarians of 1992. After Ferguson exploded last year, libertarians positioned themselves as the only political force that had no blood on their hands, the only political force that was principled enough throughout the past few decades to offer the right analyses and the right solutions to the problems faced by people now rising up in Baltimore. In 1992, the most famous libertarian of all, Ron Paul, was still between congressional stints when the riots in Los Angeles erupted, but he did run a profitable libertarian newsletter, the Ron Paul Political Report, to keep his ideas alive. By the way, this was edited by a guy named Lou Rockwell, who is very close to the Ludwig von Mises Institute, which again is heavily overlapped with the League of the South and the neo-Confederate movement. Shortly after the L.A. riots, Ron Paul put out a special issue on racial terrorism, unquote, offering his libertarian analysis of what he termed black terrorism, unquote. The criminals who terrorize our cities in riots and on every non-riot day are not exclusively young black males, but they largely are. As children, they are trained to hate whites, to believe that white oppression is responsible for all black ills, to fight the power, unquote, to steal and loot as much money from the white enemy as possible. The cause of the riots is plain. Barbarism. If the barbarians cannot loot sufficiently through legal channels, i.e. the riots, being the welfare state minus the middleman, they resort to illegal ones, to terrorism. Trouble is, few seem willing to stop them. The cops have been handcuffed. We are constantly told that it is evil to be afraid of black men, but it is hardly irrational. Black men commit murders, rapes, robberies, muggings, and burglaries all out of proportion to their numbers. I think we can safely assume that 95% of the black males in major U.S. cities are semi-criminal or entirely criminal. A few months later, in October of 1992, Dr. Paul explained how he taught his own family, presumably including his favorite son, Rand Paul, how to defend themselves and even murder what Dr. Paul called hip-hop carjackers, unquote, the urban youth who play unsuspecting whites like pianos, unquote. What can you do? More and more Americans are carrying a gun in the car. An ex-cop I know advises that if you have to use a gun on a youth, you should leave the scene immediately, disposing of the wiped-off gun as soon as possible. Such a gun cannot, of course, be registered to you, but one bought privately through the classifieds, for example. That's what people who framed Lee Harvey Oswald did, parenthetically. Beyond that, the Libertarian Party's political solution to African-American poverty and injustice was to abolish all welfare programs, public schools, and anti-discrimination laws like the Civil Rights Act. This was the solution promoted by an up-and-coming libertarian, Jacob Hornberger, who this week co-hosted an event with Ron Paul and Glenn Greenwald. Hornberger believes that 19th century antebellum slave era America was the freest society in history. An interesting view on what the alt-right was demonstrating for in Charlottesville and what their opponents were ostensibly, at least in many cases, sincerely demonstrating against. But the very forces for whom the mainstream media, the so-called progressive sector, the so-called alternative media helped to promote through the adulation of Glenn Greenwald, Julian Assange, Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, their patronization of the likes of Pierre Omidyar. The public men published falsehoods is nothing new. Be angry at the sun for setting if these things anger you. Watch the wheel slope and turn. They are all bound on the wheel. These people, those warriors, this republic, Europe, Asia. Observe them gesticulating. Observe them going down. The gang serves lies. The passionate man plays his part. The cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. So let the servile serve a leader, and the dupes be duped. Yours is not theirs. Well, indeed. And we're going to come back to the Republican Party. I'm going to touch on it briefly, and how the Republican Party's ethnic heritage outreach organization is inextricably linked with, on the one hand, an illegal domestic and foreign covert operation, the Crusade for Freedom, and how in turn it is linked to the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and people like Yaroslav Stetsko, associated with people like Gerhard Fry and Charles Willoughby, as we looked at in For the Record 971. And how that, in turn, was projected overseas. It came to power in a complete way under Ronald Reagan, and it then projected its power overseas through the Free Congress Foundation's libertarian program, and ultimately manifested first through the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, and ultimately that was, in effect, Maidan 1. And Maidan, too. We're going to go into that in our next program. I think, however, again, with the Republican Party just defecating all over themselves, in effect, by saying, oh, bigotry and religious prejudice have no place in our society, and attempting to distance themselves from Donald Trump. Well, the Republican Party is part and parcel to the Third Reich, the Underground Reich, the ABN, and originally the Committee of Subjugated Nations. The fellow who led the Republican Ethnic Heritage Council, Laszlo Pastor, Laszlo Pastor, had been the liaison between the Hungarian Arrow Cross and Adolf Hitler. He then performed the same function as the key liaison person between the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the Republican Party. Briefly, from The Secret War Against the Jews by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, there are two basic components to the Crusade for Freedom, one domestic and one foreign. At home, they were used to mobilize Eastern Europe, people of Eastern European extraction on behalf of the GOP, abroad as guerrillas to be used against the former Soviet Union. John Loftus was the decorated military officer and Justice Department official who was in charge with investigating how Nazis came to this country. He eventually resigned when he saw these same people coming to power with Ronald Reagan. From his book, and we'll go into this at greater length in our next program, From the Secret War Against the Jews. Frustrations over Truman's 1948 election victory over Dewey, which they blamed on the Jewish vote, impelled Alan Dulles and his protege Richard Nixon to work toward the realization of the fascist freedom fighter presence in the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization. As a young congressman, Nixon had been Alan Dulles' confidant. They both blamed Governor Dewey's razor-thin loss to Truman in the 1948 presidential election on the Jewish vote. When he became Eisenhower's vice president in 1952, Nixon was determined to build his own ethnic base. Nixon's secret political war of Nazis against Jews in American politics was never investigated at the time. The foreign language-speaking Croatians and other fascist emigre groups had a ready-made network for contacting and mobilizing the Eastern European ethnic bloc. There is a very high correlation between CIA domestic subsidies to fascist freedom fighters and during the 1950s and the leadership of the Republican Party's ethnic campaign groups. The motive for the under-the-table financing was clear. Nixon used Nazis to offset the Jewish vote for the Democrats. In 1953, when Republicans were in office, the immigration laws were changed to admit Nazis, even members of the SS. They flooded into the country. Nixon oversaw the new immigration program. The point is that the Republicans are pro-immigration. This is a Republican immigration program, bringing the Nazi SS into the country. Loftus resigned when Reagan came to power, and I will go into this at greater length. It's a review. When Reagan came to power, Reagan was the spokesperson for the Crusade for Freedom. Nixon was the person who put it into operation. The legal machinations to bring these people into the country were effected by William Casey, who's Nixon's first head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. He was Reagan's campaign manager and then head of Reagan's CIA. The Nazi GOP component was installed as a permanent element of the GOP by George H.W. Bush in 1973 when he was head of the Republican National Committee. Again, that is the Republican Party. More about that in our next program because we don't have time. This concludes For the Record Program 972. They are all bound on the wheel. Reflections on Charlottesville. I'm Dave Emery. This has been recorded on August 29th of 2017. Have fun.